Hey everyone, a quick note at the top that this movie and therefore this conversation revolves around a real person who died by suicide. So we wanted to let you know beforehand in case that's something you're not interested in hearing right now. If you or someone you know is struggling with thoughts of suicide, please connect with people you love or call or text the suicide hotline at 988 because you matter. Enjoy the show.
I have In One Night, we'll assassinate the leaders of capitalism. We'll burn down the banks. Oh, yeah. At dawn, law will restore power to the emperor. No.
you had Tyler until restore power to the emperor.
That was so funny watching the movie with Tyler and being like, yeah, oh no.
He was an intellectual who advocated action. He was a rebel who fought for tradition. He was an artist who shocked the world. Francis Ford Coppola and George Lucas present a new film by Paul Schrader. Mishima.
Welcome to Show Me the Movies with Justin and Nick, a movie podcast hosted by lifelong cousins slash buddies that digs into movies that mean something to us and our guests. I'm Nick.
I'm Justin.
And today we have with us Tyler May Grutheson.
Yo.
Say something, Tyler.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Tyler.
Honestly, Justin, I'm kind of surprised that Tyler decided to come on after we have been giving him such a hard time over his penchant of putting on Letterboxd reviews before he has watched a movie. And what else? Oh, yesterday at the bar, I got a PBR and Tyler was just like being really mean to me about it. And so I was being pretty unkind to him as well.
Tyler really has something against PBRs, even though they're delicious.
Also, when we were watching the game last night, I was drinking a PBR. And this old guy at a different table was just pointing at it. And I was like, what is this guy pointing at? And he's like, I like your PBR. I was like, yeah, man, because it was in a can and it was not on tap. He's like, I would have gotten one if I knew they had it. I was like, see, this man put some respect on PBR's name.
I lost the battle that night.
Thanks for the invite last night, guys. Also, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, of course.
Actually, your wife did invite me, Nick. Did you know that?
No.
Oh, she did. Okay.
She's so nice. I love her. I was like, please don't invite Justin. I hate him.
She was like, we should. And you're like, okay, fine.
Fine. No. Gosh. Where were we? Okay. Today, we're talking about Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters.
I was worried you were going to forget the Life in Four Chapters part.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Just gonna say Mishima.
That's very important. So, Tyler, Tyler has been a buddy of mine for about 10 years, which is crazy to
that
say
is crazy.
Out loud. And Tyler's choice in movie, when we decided, we said, you've got one. You're definitely only coming on once. We're not having you.
This is a one-time thing.
He was like, all right, I've got to choose something that is really popular, that everyone loves, that anyone can get behind. And so he chose the populist classic, Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters. Tyler, just start us off. Why did you choose Mishima?
I love this movie. This movie hits me right in the spiritual part of my body, my soul.
Spiritual part of your body. Can you direct me to where that is on your body?
Point.
Right here. Okay. Right below my left nipple.
Oh, okay, yeah. It's like kind of near the heart, too. Yeah.
His ribcage. Okay, so Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters, directed by Paul Schrader, released in 1985. It stars Ken Ogata as Yukio Mishima, Go Riju as Mishima, ages 18 to 19, Masato Azawa as Mishima, ages 9 to 14, Yuki Nagahara as Mishima, age 5, with some other actors as well.
Good pronunciation, Nick.
Yeah, I want to apologize to the Japanese language because I'm going to be reading and saying some names and I'm going to do my absolute best to pronounce them correctly. And it's probably not going
to. I think
go
you should just apologize to the country.
Well, you're going
to
do all the you're going to do all the quotes in Japanese, right?
Oh yes.
Okay, good.
Nick learned Japanese for this episode.
Yeah. So just to start us off with a little plot synopsis, and you guys can add anything you want. Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters, delves into the life of writer, poet, playwright, actor Yukio Mishima through a series of vignettes, culminating in his takeover of a military base and ritualistic suicide.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. So just a little bit of background. Yukio Mishima, a very interesting person and a person who had a tragic life in many ways. And the movie's really looking at his art. He was prolific. He made tons of short stories and plays, wrote a lot of essays as well. And the movie goes through several key parts of his life. And there are several parts that are just people acting out cinematic versions of plays or short stories that he wrote that Schrader, the film's creator, is looking at as being emblematic of his life in some way. Yeah. Anything to add on that, Tyler?
No. I mean, the only thing is that he wanted to incorporate this one, I think it's a novel, called Forbidden Colors.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he wasn't able to because I think his wife or his family, yeah, didn't want him portrayed as gay. That was a big reason.
Mm-hmm. And we'll jump into that later. Like, there are a lot of themes in this movie. There's a theme of masculinity and the ways in which it is acted out. There's definitely, like, Mishima and his sexuality. There is also the theme of fascism, which thankfully in the U.S. in 2025, we don't have to
worry about that.
We don't have to worry about that at all.
No one's thinking that. We're good.
Nope. Not a relevant theme.
Nick, can I ask you, were you aware of Mishima as a person since you are like a history guy? Like, you've taught history and you're aware. I know it's not U.S. history, but like, did you know about him before watching this movie ever?
Not before, like, me looking into this movie was me learning about him. Like, me being like, oh, this looks like an interesting movie. Then I read about him before watching the movie for the first time. And so, no, I was not. Okay. He was completely not on my radar. Yeah.
It seems I really don't know much about this guy or the history of part of this outside of watching this movie. But it seems like a pretty, like, niche part of Japan history that, like, it would probably be hard pressed to find someone teaching or like talking about this in classrooms, but like, it is interesting though. So, like, I think it could be there. I don't know.
I mean, my understanding of him, which is very incomplete, is that he was a very big deal in Japan. Like, he was prolific, wrote a ton of stuff, and was like kind of a superstar. And he also, I think, toggled between when he was writing like literary stuff and like pulpy, popular stuff. And so he had a lot of different things. And he did all kinds of things. There are some movies that he's in, which none of which I've seen. He has also done, well, actually, that's not true. I have seen one of his movies, the one that he directed. But then there's also his, he did like a series of him posing for photography, which we'll also talk about because that's also really related to the themes and things that he covers. I want to go into box office real quick. So this was released in September of 1985. The budget, an estimated $5 million. Do you guys know how much it made? Did you look at this?
I did not.
I didn't look at it. I'm going to guess, though. Wait, sorry, did you say any additional context? Like, it was wide release and everything, right? Like, it wasn't...
Well, not in Japan.
So, not in Japan, and I don't know how wide of a release it got in the U.S. I'm going to say not very wide because, well, I'll give you a hint in saying not very wide given the box office,
okay,
if
I'm
had
gonna,
to guess.
I'm going to guess $2 million is what it made.
Good guess. Tyler, you
guess? $500,000.
It made about $570,000. So,
whoa, Tyler.
In other words, it did not make money, and it did not premiere in Japan because Mishima was a really controversial figure. And he also, I mean, the movie is fascinating because you have Paul Schrader, who is American, coming in but wanting to direct a movie that uses Japanese actors and that is in Japanese. One of the executive producers on this movie is Francis Ford Coppola, and his Zoetrope Studios like financed a lot of this. And so you actually have the money being put towards it. But a lot of people in Japan did not want this movie to be made. And honestly, understandably so, because if I were in that situation, I would not love an American coming in to portray one of our most controversial figures. Like, I don't know. So a lot of people didn't like that, but especially a lot of right-wingers in Japan did not like that this movie was being made, because Mishima, as we'll talk about, a lot of his politics were pretty right-wing, and they did not want this to be made. And there was kind of an informal agreement that between and I have this written down somewhere. I cannot remember the name off the top of my head. Oh, I think it's Toho Studios, which was the studio in Japan that was doing a lot with it. There was kind of an unwritten agreement between them and a lot of the people who were upset about it, saying, okay, we can make this movie, but it won't premiere in Japan. And I think it's in 2024 or 2023, there was talk of it being finally premiering in Japan, and I don't think it ever did. Because I read an article on the possibility of it happening, and then I found nothing afterwards. And then I looked through the film festival, the films that they screened, and I did not see that there. So, anyway, this is going to be a hard movie to cover, because as we're already getting into it, like, there's just so much context that surrounds all of it. I find myself getting a little like, oh, but then there's this, but then there's this, but then there's this. So let's just jump into the blender, where we break down this movie, we look at its little morsels and parts, and we talk about what stands out to us. So to start, when, where, and how many times did you see this movie? Let's start with you, Tyler, since you're our guest.
You and I watched it in November 2023 in my basement for the first time. Mm-hmm. I remember we turned it on and saw produced by Francis Ford Coppola and George Lucas. And I was like, wow, I can't believe that this movie was made.
Yeah.
I rewatched it later in February with my friend Andrew, who had a similar reaction to Justin. Was like, huh. And then I had food poisoning that year, and so this was my this was my comfort movie that I watched on my phone illegally.
Isn't this movie such just a warm blanket, Justin?
It is.
Doesn't
it make
you feel so nice inside?
Watch this movie every day and feel good about myself. Watch this movie on your phone?
Yeah, I was like, had my phone propped up on my wife's pillow, and I was laying down on my pillow, and I was half asleep.
I'm assuming you had headphones in, but imagine if it was just playing out loud.
It was playing out loud.
Was she asleep?
No, she wasn't there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you were saying that like she was like in the room like sleeping with you. I was like, what?
No, that was not happening.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And then I watched it the other day with you guys.
Yeah. So I have seen it twice. I watched it with you the first time, Tyler. It was on both of our watch lists, and I remember we had maybe started it like for 5 minutes, and then we went upstairs to get something, and I was like, yeah, man, and you know how this thing ends, and you're like, wait, what? And I was like, oh, and I think I did spoil it.
Yeah.
Because I had read about Mishima before watching the movie, and I was like, he actually takes his own life after taking over a military base, and this actually happened in real life, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
And us going into it with Justin, we were like, Justin, how much do you know about this movie? And
I was like, zero.
Yeah, we were like,
I don't look at movies before I watch them. I try not to.
Yeah, so we kept it that way. Justin, were you surprised with where the movie went?
Surprised?
Yeah.
Like, towards, like, the end? Yes. Yeah. I didn't know what to think while I was watching the movie, because I was just, like, taking it all in. But, yeah, I was surprised that he actually did that. Like, I don't think I thought he was going to actually do it until once he steps back into the building and, like, goes, like, get on his knees. I'm like, yo, what?
Yeah.
This is crazy.
Yeah. So, Justin, you watched this Wednesday. What were your impressions just watching it for the first time?
It was. So here's the thing. I did like a lot about the movie. Like, my impressions were like, dang, this looks like super good. And like the set design and everything was incredible.
Yeah.
The music was awesome. Those were cool things. And I didn't mind the movie as a whole, like the rest of it, but I just wasn't that into it. Like, I could not feel myself like wanting to think about it that much more, or like get invested in this guy's story and stuff. So I don't know, that's just where I was at. And to clarify, we were also in a setting where we were stressed about dogs playing in front of us.
And speak for yourself. I was locked in.
I guess
Yeah. Was mad at my dog. Yeah.
Tyler has this thing where he really, if his dog is enjoying life, Tyler like can't focus on the movie. He's like, if the dog is panting or like going, Tyler's like, oh my god.
No, it's not that. It's if Archie is thinking about moving, Tyler's like, stay down.
Well, yeah. To be fair, he will just try to make out with your dog, Justin, and yeah, it's true. Kind of distracting.
It's hard to blame them. They're like, they love each other.
They do.
Well. And I don't even know if it was that. Also, the Pacers game was later that night, and I was like excited for that. And so here's the other thing, though. Do you guys get what I'm saying, though? Like when you sit down for a movie and you're like, I just don't know if I'm in the right headspace for a movie or even a certain type of movie. I think I was in that mind space. So like that could have affected my viewing experience.
Yeah. One time, I went to watch the movie Drive, one of my favorite movies, and I was like, I'm just really not in this right now. And I was like concerned about myself. I was like, am I okay? This is... And then I watched it a few months later, and I was like, oh, yeah.
We're okay.
We're okay. Okay, so what feelings, other than entertained, did you feel while watching this movie? Tyler, you can speak to, like, just any time you've watched it. You can speak to this time around, whatever you want.
Yeah, so maybe lack of emotional intelligence 101. I don't really know how to name my feeling while I'm watching this movie.
I struggle with this question sometimes, too.
Yeah. No, I feel like I'm vibrating watching it. It's an awesome movie. But I think maybe if I had to, like, nail it down, it'd be something like feeling understood, really. Mm. Now, understood not being, oh, man.
Would you say you feel seen?
Yeah. But not like... love fascist politics, but more like
this guy had something to write about him. He was doing it right.
Right. No, I feel understood by this movie. There, and it's not an accident that Schrader made it. Who?
I thought you said the traitor. I was like, who's the traitor?
Yeah, he made it coming from Grand Rapids and like a reformed Christian upbringing, and then moved to Hollywood and started making movies. So he's got that like guilt complex and everything, and the pathetic lonely man, which we'll get into, I'm sure. But so
okay, Justin, what you feeling?
I don't think I can name a feeling on this one, but I will say that I think that watching it, it felt like a fever dream movie.
Yeah,
is any of this real? Like, what is actually happening at moments? That's how it felt to me. Like, that's not a feeling, but that's what I perceived as happening.
For me, I said awe, like a sense of awe at parts of the movie, because parts of them are so beautiful. Just the set design and what you're looking at, particularly like the Golden Pavilion, is just kind of, I don't know, it just gives me a sense of awe. And then sadness. I felt sad. Like, this is a sad movie, ultimately. It's a tragedy because you see someone who's kind of, who glorifies suicide. And then ends their life in that way, which is really, really sad.
Yeah.
Okay, time to get to kind of the thing, like the fulcrum that I feel like the blender turns on, which is what to you resonates as true about this movie? Think realism, think spiritually true, think true to life, etc. I also want to add a caveat on this one, because as I was thinking about this for myself, I wrote down, typically... this question means, what do you think that the director of the film is saying? But seeing as much of this film is written directly by Mishima, because it is his plays and short stories, I'm also going to engage with what I think Mishima is kind of trying to put forth as well, which is a weird separation that for most movies just doesn't apply, but for this one I think does. So if you guys want to do that, that's fine. If you guys want to do just what Schrader's saying, that's fine.
Yeah, because
I think it's kind of impossible to separate for this movie.
Yeah, because the structure of the movie is his last day is kind of constantly playing throughout the movie, and then there's three of his, I think they're novels, right? Not short stories.
No. One of them is a short story, one of them is a play, and then maybe one of them is a novel. I'm not sure.
Definitely one of them is a novel.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, oops. Anyway.
So, Tyler, I want to start with you. What resonates as true to you?
Yeah, I thought about this one a lot, have thought about this one a lot. I think, so this movie, and really, like, again, it being made by Schrader, I think this is why Schrader is drawn to this movie, or one reason. But it's about a lonely man who doesn't know how to navigate the world well. And he resorts to internal philosophizing that is just utterly detached from reality.
Yeah.
And he's like so certain about his ideals despite their complete isolation from the rest of the world. It's not completely fair to say that, but that is the vibe of it, you know? So like he'll say, like right towards the end of the movie, there's that weird black and white scene where him and his cadets are like jogging through and he's saying all his stuff before he's going to go kill himself. And he says, "I was running in the dim light of dawn when I felt something emerging as slowly as my sweat, the possibility of the ultimate verification of my existence." Mm-hmm. It's just such a, frankly, just self-righteous, like weird thing to say.
Yeah.
But that's the vibe. It's like someone who, like, instead of being like, I have these relationships that, like, I don't know, prove out my existence, to use his language, he has to, like, just talk about these weird ideals of beauty and art. He can't just, like, have it in relationships.
Tyler, you can answer this or not. Is there anything that, because you alluded to this a little bit with, like, Schrader and his reformed upbringing, is there anything about the ideals piece that resonates with your faith background? And you can talk to that if you want to. You do not have to.
Whew. Well, how much time do you have?
We have plenty of time. So
no, absolutely. I mean,
we got
I think
3 p.m.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a hard one to answer. I feel like the way that Schrader is portraying Mishima and his ideals is really like a testament to how he feels about his own faith and how I feel about my own faith background, which is like he portrays it so beautifully and he doesn't like mock Mishima throughout the movie, but it is still like this is crazy.
I think that you hit on a really good point where my perception of the tone of this movie is there are times where I think you're intentionally supposed to look at Mishima and be like, dude, like you are kind of pathetic, but he's not poking fun.
Yeah.
He's not like, wow, look at this like loser. And like it's not that.
It's not Anna McKay.
Right, yeah. It feels truly in a way empathetic yet critical.
Yeah.
And not just like signing off on everything that the guy was about.
Yeah. And there's also, like, there's a rejection of, like, an almost childlike nostalgia in this movie, too. So, like, there's a point at which he says the samurai motto used to be a way of life and now it's a cliche. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like one of these, like, oh, this thing that is, like, the force of my life is now just a cheap phrase. And I think he's both, I at least both resonate with that and view that as, like, a, like, I'm going to keep using the word pathetic, but not in, like, a really derogatory way. But, like, it's kind of a, yeah, I don't know. I get the feeling of, like, the spiritual force of one's life drying up and then feeling like you have to rebuild it. But actually trying to do that oneself is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure. Justin?
I said simply that when you're repressed in multiple ways, just some nasty shit is going to come out. That's just what I gained from like the beginning of the movie and like watching some of the things that happened with his mom and grandma. And
like what kinds of things?
Like saying, like basically keeping him inside at one point and like saying you can't go outside and you're too frail, like some of those things.
And that's real. Like he lived with his grandma for a time growing up and she was very like keeping him indoors and like not letting him play with other kids and things.
There's an awesome scene really early in the movie where it's in black and white and it's young Mishima and he's looking out the window at a bunch of kids playing in his grandmother's house. Mm-hmm. And then she like tells him like, don't look out the window, like come back here. And so he closes the curtains and then just continues to stand where he was, literally just facing the curtains.
Right. Yeah. I didn't notice that. And that was interesting. I mean, I don't know how much we're also going to talk about this, but he was definitely gay. I mean, not definitely, but like he seemed gay and he didn't like lean into it ever. And he like just basically tried to be with women his whole life. And I don't want to speak for anyone's sexuality, I guess. I can't like 100% say with certainty, but it just seemed that way. And then it seemed like that was another thing that was being repressed in his life. And just,
absolutely.
I'm pretty sure,
what were you going to say?
I'm pretty sure he did have relationships with men. I'm not 100% sure on the historicity of that. But
much of what I was able to see was like speculative. Okay. Although I think there may be one or two confirmed things, but his sexuality was absolutely complex and either like gay or bi, or something more complex than just straight, for sure. And he, something I found interesting on that point, Justin, with like the like sexual repression piece of his identity. So there's the scene in the play where they're in the Pink Hotel and the woman is saying like, I'll be your mirror. Like this face is your face. And he's like, I don't know. That was just interesting. And then he's talking about early on in the movie, he's talking about the beauty that he sees in theater. And he's talking about men being able to be women on stage. And then later in the movie, when he's flying in the plane and he's using a lot of transcendent language, he talks about like no male or female, which I find really interesting because you see these little like glimpses throughout his work. Or throughout things that he says where you're like, oh, wow, yeah, there's definitely something more here, but something that through his life you see he does not feel that he is able to, like, express.
Yeah.
That repression stuff and also being held back by his grandma and mom. Was it his grandma when he was in the house looking out of the, the window?
Yep.
Okay. That ties into, like, what you were talking about, Tyler, about the isolation stuff, because like that's going to lead to that, and then it's like, how are you going to know like what you think is, how is it practical? Because you're just like thinking about these things and you're like, oh, that makes sense, but it's like, well, if you actually played this out in real life, how would that go?
Well, I thought, Justin, as I was watching, this is a weird comparison to make, but I was thinking about Jerry Maguire, because in Jerry Maguire,
heck yeah,
because in Jerry Maguire, he, and we talked about this in our episode that we did, he writes his little pamphlet and he's like, this is what I believe. And then he has to live it out, right? When he loses his job, because it's like fewer clients, less money. And then he has to live into that. And Mishima is a person who has his ideals and very much lives into them. And a lot of them are terrible, but he definitely like lives into them to basically the fullest extent that you can in some ways.
Yeah, it's really interesting because he seemed to have no problem living into some of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Another thing that resonated as at least interesting to me is that I think throughout the movie, you see Mishima trying to get past or transcend his art of just writing words through the sculpting of his body in like lifting weights and becoming big, but then also in this I'm a tough samurai thing. And so he's almost trying to transcend his art or his, as is referred to in the movie, his word, transcend it through his samurai stuff and through his bulking of his body. And I think that the movie kind of asks the viewers, if you can get past this guy's toxicity and see his art transcend him in some ways, where it's like, and I don't think that the movie like is super preachy or comes down really hard on either of those, but I think it does ask like, is this guy's work worth something, even though this is who he is? And even as his art is very connected to what he does, like particularly the last fictional story in the movie, which is a character who like does commit seppuku and all of that. And you're like, oh my gosh, like this is crazy. And it's one of those things where you're like, what do I make of this guy's art? Just knowing who he actually was and what he actually did, which I think is a really interesting question. I wrote down in my notes, connecting to this point, art can be crafted by artists with major flaws. I think of, just to name a few, J.K. Rowling, who seems to just be losing her mind over trans women, who made Harry Potter. I also think of Kanye West, who is just calling himself a Nazi now, but who has made music that I have really resonated with at times in my life. I can't currently listen to Kanye right now. I just can't do it.
His newest Hitler album doesn't really speak
horrible.
To you.
Yeah. Ugh, it's honestly just depressing. But that thought of like, in that kind of thing of like, a lot of artists and people who make really amazing things have these major, major issues.
Well, and like, I think of Chinatown too right away, because that's like a really gross example.
You like Chinatown a lot more than
that
I do.
Movie rocks, unfortunately. But yeah, but the difference like here is Mishima is aware that his art is how he finds himself, and yet he can't seem to find himself in it, so he has to always transcend it. And I don't think Roman Polanski was thinking through that.
Yeah, you don't think he was reflective.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else that really like pops out to you as true, Tyler?
This is a phrase I use when I talk about this movie, and I don't like it, but I can't really think of another one, which is that this movie feels anti-philosophical in a certain way.
I literally had that written down because I've heard you use that word before, and I want you to explain what you mean by
I was gonna say, what do you mean by this? Because I actually don't know what you're
saying.
Some
context. Tyler's getting his master's. He's getting his master's in philosophy, so he's kind of a philosophical guy. Why does he like anti-philosophical movies? Tyler.
Yeah. No, that's totally true. By anti-philosophical, I mean it. I think it. Something that the movie is saying is it's rejecting the idea that you can, irrespective of your social world, your emotional world, you can just like either get at this thing, capital T truth, or get at this thing that like verifies who you are, regardless of all of that, you know. And it, I think. There's a trend in at least Western philosophical history to do exactly that, to transcend your time and space. And like you get at the subject or the forms, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's what I mean by anti-philosophical. It's anti-philosophical in the way that like philosophy is this be all end all. In the case of Mishima, it's like his art and his word is both the way that he finds out who he is and can't be the be-all and all.
Yeah, absolutely. To the point on transcendence, this is something that I was thinking through as I was thinking about what this movie means to me. Okay, Mishima has this fixation and obsession with transcendence through death. And even like towards the end of the movie, after he's taken over the military base, given his speech, gets laughed at by like the troops, and he's like, all right, I am going to end this. And he talks in the movie too about like, beautiful people should die at 40. This idea of your beauty being immortalized. I think he sees transcendence through death, which is, I think, kind of a gross idea. But I also think it's one step away, because I think about my own faith, and I think of like transcendence through resurrection. And you have to have death to have resurrection, but I think that he almost fetishizes and almost in some ways worships death in a really gross way. But that's like one step away, I think, from transcendence through resurrection and restoral and renewal. Because throughout this movie, you see lots of like, okay, I need to destroy something beautiful, or beauty is right on the edge of destruction, or things are most beautiful when they're at the point where they are about to be destroyed. So if you think of the Golden Pavilion play, that's the one that comes to mind for me, where the Golden Pavilion is beautiful and that ends in him burning it down. And so I think that that's a pretty bankrupt philosophy and idea.
Yeah, that really annoys me.
Yeah, it does. It's very aggravating. But I was like, how does this relate to me and my own like view of the world? And I'm like, well, I see a lot of beauty through resurrection with my own faith, and that's, it's adjacent, but also categorically different in some ways.
This makes me think of what you're just saying. Is it really immediately I started thinking about athletes and how they want, like, some, I think this happens very rarely, but some go out like near the height of their powers. And because they're like, I want to walk away. And a lot of them, maybe not the height of their powers, but they're still really good. But they're like, I want to walk away. And, like, that's my decision and not the game's decision.
Yeah.
So that just makes me think of him. But, like, this is way higher stakes. It's death.
Yeah.
So, like,
absolutely.
Geez.
Yeah. Another thing that was interesting to me is that oftentimes what you think, what you envision in your mind as an ideal, when you try to live it out, it actually, I think it kind of almost says the truth of what it actually is.
Yeah.
Because he is thinking, like, I'm going to take over this military base. I'm going to talk about how important it is for Japan to reinstate the emperor as God. And I'm going to, like, lead this, like, glorious thing. And in the movie, when you see the people like gathered to listen to him when he's talking at the balcony, you can barely hear him. Yeah. And it's,
that part was so funny to me.
Yeah, it's morbidly funny where you're like, wow, this guy, like, you can't even hear what you're saying. And even if we could hear what you're saying, we're probably going to laugh you out of the room. And it's like, I think that shows the actual metal of what he believes. Yeah. It shows what it's actually worth, which is nothing in a lot of ways. And that's what makes this in so many ways so tragic, but also just like, I think, real. When you look at a lot of ideology, it's just like, oh, when the rubber hits the road, this is bankrupt, just morally. Yeah. Or just in meaning, even.
Well, and that's the scene where he says one of my favorite lines in the movie, which I don't really know how in Japanese this reading would work, but he says up on the podium, he says, "I appeal to you." And he's both saying like, hey, I'm appealing to you here right now, hear me. And he's literally just stating, this is appealing to you, instead of letting it appeal, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Final thought for me on just like what, this is not even like, oh, this resonates, it's true. This is more like, I really like this and I didn't know where to put it.
So true.
Philip Glass does the score on this. I typically, like my favorite type of movie scores typically are synthy or very ambient.
Tangerine Dream.
Oh, yeah. But then in this movie, it's orchestral. But I love it. It is such a beautiful score. And I think gives the movie some really cool dissonance in some ways where it's like, this is so uplifting and lovely. And then as you're watching things that are sometimes uplifting and lovely and sometimes really not. Also, I'm 99% sure that the score for Mishima has been used in This American Life as just like some of their background music. I tried to check that, like find it, and I couldn't find it. But I am 99% sure that that is a thing, that that has
That's
been
incredible.
Used by This American Life. If you are listening to this and you know whether or not that is true, reach out to us.
Seriously.
So, you know what me and Tyler were just talking about movies that used orchestras as their... I don't even know why I'm bringing this up. I just want to shit on them, apparently. But movies that use orchestras are Steven Spielberg movies, and some of them suck.
Tyler's take of Indiana Jones' theme is bad. That's so
okay.
Terrible.
Well, that one I disagree with, but like mostly there's like Jaws, Jurassic Park, and Indiana Jones. Those rock.
Well,
those,
Jaws is just amazing, yeah.
But otherwise, they annoy me.
I feel like the thing that killed me in watching Temple of Doom with my father-in-law was every single shot change. I don't know what the technical film term for that is. Was accompanied by the score like changing,
for
and
that
it was
character?
Like, yeah, for the shot, whether it's like the view of the bad guys and then the music went down, or the view of the good guy and it was like, oh, here's the theme again.
Sounds thematic.
Oh, it drives me crazy,
dude. That's but here's that. The thing. I think that Mishima did that, but in a really good way.
Yeah, well, like,
well, it wasn't like every shot changed though.
Yeah, well, like in the Kyoko's house, which is the second story, the score actually stops being orchestral and has like the little guitar riff, which is, that's like my favorite part of the whole score. That part is incredible.
Yeah, there's some really, we haven't talked about that enough. The score is amazing. It is incredible.
I have this giant playlist on Spotify called Speechless that is just tons of instrumental music, and this was added to that.
Yeah, and maybe to step on bringing up fun facts about this movie later, like, another movie I really love. I almost wanted to do this movie instead, but we didn't, which is The Revenant. The guy who did, I love that score. That's
Tyler loves
that
Revenant.
Movie's awesome. Sakamoto is the guy who does that score, and I cannot believe this. And Schrader himself said this on some interview, that they originally were going to have Sakamoto do the score and
That's
then change to Philip Glass, which is incredible.
So moving into our next question, what is not true about this movie? What do you not buy with or think that the movie puts forth that you don't like? And again, typically this is read as what do you think the movie's putting forward, not like what does this character say or what does this character put forward. But in this sense, because it is Mishima, because frankly, I don't have any issue with what I think the movie is saying necessarily. but I'm going to kind of use this to talk about what I think Mishima is saying.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a fascist who wants to bring back the emperor. So,
this just in.
Yeah, seriously. So that's probably the first thing.
Right. Okay. Yeah, for sure. Justin?
I struggle with this one again because I honestly think this movie is really cool. It's just not for me. So that's why I do think it's really cool. So I'm like also struggling like what to do with this question. But something I just put down, I don't know if this is anything. This is just me kind of spitballing. But sometimes I almost thought if some of the artistic flourishes like by the movie itself like cover up some of the problematic parts of his life. Sometimes it was honestly hard to even get through to me like, oh, this guy is like going off the rails a little bit, mostly because like everything else is so distracting in a way.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that fits this category or not, but that's just something I was thinking about as I was pondering this question. And that that also could fit under something I would change in this movie, which is a different question we ask, but I don't know.
Would you change how beautiful the movie looks?
No, I wouldn't change that at all. I just think that you could maybe do a little better job of showing some aspects of, I don't know how you'd even do this. I would be curious to hear you guys' thoughts on this. Like showing some parts of his life or scenes where it's like, oh, this guy, interesting. I don't feel like I got much of that. Like, what? Do you feel like that? Like, I watched the movie and I was like, I mean, yeah, he does. The things he's doing are awful, but it was never like, it wasn't overtly like I feel in like, your face, though.
I feel like I'm getting that through his art itself that's portrayed.
Okay.
Like, especially in like the act where it's like the woman who's like the Yakuza affiliated lady who's like, I'm basically just going to slice and dice you literally like you are like I own you now. I'm like, this is not great. Like I think this is fetishizing a thing that I think is bad. So like I think that's to me, that's where kind of the tension comes in because the scenes and the set pieces look beautiful. But I'm like, this is and I think that does say something about Mishima's character is what he's writing.
It does. And I guess you kind of have to approach the art and like the stories being told as representing who he is as a person.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes when I am viewing or when I was watching this movie and viewing some of those scenes or parts of his art, I just took it as art. And I wasn't like immediately like, well, this is part of who he is and this is reflecting, you know. So I think that's partially maybe on me, but like I do agree with you though. Like that definitely says something.
I think it's very intentionally muddled. Like parts of this movie, you're looking at. Like for me, I look at it and I'm like, I feel like I'm looking at a beautiful museum piece, and this is very uncomfortable. Yeah, I think I wrote down for this Mishima's real fixation on beauty on the cusp of destruction. I think this sort of like fetishization and glorification of death and suicide is gross. And also something that you do see now and then in like music and in film today, I think.
Yeah.
I do think that in general, like I think the conversations around mental health and suicide and things of that nature have gotten a lot better. Like I'll think of an example that I think does a really good job of handling suicide is The Bear. Like the show The Bear, I think that show handles it super well and like empathetically, but then also like in a way that is very life affirming as well. So I put beauty on the cusp of death and Mishima's obsession with that. And then this idea that I don't totally disagree with, but I disagree with it in the way that Mishima, I think, thinks it's important is the need to be physically strong as a man to be like properly masculine or maybe perfected is kind of what he wanted. I think there's kind of, which first of all, not against exercise, not against lifting weights and getting buff. If you look at me, you might think I'm against it, but not against that, but his sort of just like, this is so important. And like, I have to look like this. 'Cause he grew up as kind of a frail kid, and not very physically strong. And he's like, this is super important. I have to, like, I've written this, like, masculine, tough thing. And now I have to, and he talks about this with the samurai ethos of the harmony of pen and sword. Like, I have to be sculpted. I have to be this way to be properly masculine. And I think there's, this isn't necessarily the exact same, but I think there's some conversation around like his repression of his sexuality with that as well. Like I have to look this way or be this way.
I think the only other thing I would add to this question is to bring philosophy into it. One of my favorite people, who's it going to be, Nick?
Hegel.
Yeah. Hegel has this idea in the phenomenology of the unhappy consciousness, which is the consciousness that views yourself as finite and the ultimate as not finite, as infinite, and the gap is unbridgeable. And so it leads someone to either retreat into yourself, retreat to never be happy with the position one's life is in. And the solution from Hegel is the problem is not like we haven't found the way to bridge the gap to the infinite. It's because we view the infinite in this way that it's a, there's a this perfect chasm. Mm. So for Mishima, I think it's like one of these things, the movie Mishima, where it's showing his like beauty, art, fulfillment as like it cannot be gotten to. And that I think is one thing that movie is portraying. So I guess like what's not true is his view of like satisfaction as ultimate, because then that leads him to say, well, we just have to end this.
Yeah. You know? And not to get too like theological, but to me, it's almost a disconnect from the body. Whereas to me, in my own faith, it is very important that Christ is both God and man, like that he is an embodied person, that Jesus came, lived a life and literally like went through all of the disgustingness of being a human that is very imperfect, like not to be too crass, but like Jesus pooped and like it just like lived a life and like had pain and all of these things. And I think Mishima in this movie is trying to just be like, no, I want to completely transcend the body. Like the body, maybe this is unfair, but this is kind of what I get from it, of almost like the body, unless it is perfectly muscular, perfectly masculine, perfectly this, it's really a hindrance and I need to escape my body and transcend through this.
Well, because getting buff for him isn't a matter of like, once I get buff, it does this and this for me and my embodiment. It's I have now transcended my body because
it's like trying to hit this Platonic ideal in a way. Yeah. Yeah. Anything else on not true? Justin, you look like you got something to say over there.
No, I don't. I was just like thinking of it. I was trying to see if anything came to my mind in the moment. I didn't write anything else down.
Yeah, I want to talk on this real quick because before watching Mishima, rewatching it this time, I was like, I want to just familiarize myself with something that this guy did work-wise. And so I watched his movie called, I'm going to try to pronounce it correctly, Yukoku or Patriotism or The Right of Love and Death. It is a movie. It's a short movie. It's less than 30 minutes long. It was made in 1966. It's a silent film. It's in black and white. It is directed by Mishima and stars him. And in the movie, he is on a stage. It all takes place on this like stage that is set to be his like home. And the lead character, Takayama, has loyalty to the emperor over quote unquote like corrupt cabinet. So there's a corrupt cabinet and there is he was going to be used against his friends who started a coup. And he is really split between loyalty to the emperor in obeying his orders to stop this coup and also his friends who are trying to get rid of this, what he sees as corrupt cabinet. There's some really beautiful parts of this movie. Like there's one part where his wife is just like hanging out at his home and he's gone and his like hands are superimposed and just like almost like touching her, and it's like almost a ghost-like thing that's just like really beautiful at the beginning. He and his wife decide to commit suicide together because he's like, I just can't do this, like I can't go against my men, but I can't disobey the emperor. And it says, so like he and his wife very sensually like stage and practice their suicide. And there's a ton of eroticism and just focus on bodies in it. It's not super explicit, but it's just very, like, very focused on bodies. It is beautifully done. It is abhorrent in what it says because they both end up taking their own lives and dying by suicide, which is so sad. And honestly, like one of those, it was one of those things that I watched, and more than most things I can think of, I was like, this is, there's something undeniable about this movie and how powerfully it portrays its things. And just the black and white photography looks incredible. There's a sweetness between husband and wife in the movie too, but like it is also so abhorrent in what it says. And so I can't like even recommend it or say, oh, I loved this, because I didn't. But there's just some pieces of it that were undeniable. And that was really interesting context for me going into the movie this time around to see like, oh, these are themes that he's just dealing with all the time. And yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah, I want to watch that this week now.
Yeah. Okay, getting into some movie-specific questions. Anybody have any movie-specific questions?
I have a few. Is it worth overthrowing capitalism if we have to install an emperor? Is Trump our actual anti-capitalist hero? No.
No.
To That's actually answer that question, definitely not. I think I'd rather just keep capitalism.
There you go. I don't think Trump is as opposed to capitalism as he might. Well, I don't think he says he is, but I think some people think he might be.
Yeah.
He is not. Well, yeah. I have a few questions. If Mishima were alive now, do you think he would have a podcast?
Oh, my God. Of course he would.
And
he'd be on Joe Rogan constantly.
And would it be more annoying than this one?
Yeah, probably.
It'd be more annoying.
Okay, we'll leave that to our listeners.
Well, yeah.
No, what were you saying, Justin?
I was just going to inject a question. What if he does not, if him speaking outside of the building at the end goes better, does he not kill himself? Like, did he kill himself because it went so bad?
He was like, this is what I'm going to do if this goes bad. But I want to start a coup. Frankly, I don't think, from what I can tell, that he is a dummy. So I don't think I personally don't think he actually believed it would work. But he could have been so high on his own supply that he did think it would work. So I don't know. Personally, I think that he...
Well, then what's the point of this?
I don't think that he thought it would work. Like, I can't imagine that. Although, like, sometimes people get so caught up in their own, like, bubble, like... I don't know. Maybe he did.
I think he was a dog chasing a car. Like, he would not have known what to do if the emperor, if everyone was like, yeah, let's do this. Let's install the emperor.
Like, right. A dog chasing a squirrel. Like, if they get a squirrel, they're like, oh, well, now what do I do? I guess some dogs would kill it.
Dogs would. Mine wouldn't.
But, okay, that just even annoys me even more. I'm like, well, what's the point of all this?
Gosh. That's what makes it so tragic.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. Okay. Well, my other question was, asking Tyler about what he meant by an anti-philosophy movie, but he already
I talked about that.
All right, cool. Any other movie-specific questions?
imagine a this is kind of more like a let's imagine this together, Schrader Man movie mashup.
Okay.
How would Mishima's first date go?
Wait, you're saying Schrader Man, Schrader Michael Mann?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously. All right.
This is how the first date would go. This is all from Mishima. That really was your first time, wasn't it? Yes, I thought so. Don't worry, you did all right. Are you always so serious? Didn't you enjoy it? I hope you remember my name. In a day or two, I'm going to be famous. And then this is when they said, let's get on with this big romance.
Yes.
Yes.
Those are actual lines from the movie, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, from the hotel.
Lady, why do you care so much about what I do?
Amazing. He would do more probably safe cracking and car chasing.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Which character is the best Hang? Which is the worst Hang? I'm really interested to know your thoughts here. Who's the best Hang, you guys?
Tyler, you go first. I honestly don't know how to answer these questions this time around.
Honestly, this question is quite impossible within this movie.
I have an answer.
I guess Mishima, just because he's at least interesting and creative. But
I was going to say he's the worst Hang.
He's probably also the worst Hang, yes.
I had for best Hang the guy the college student with the long hair to the right of him when he's talking to all the college students. There's this dude who just kind of looks like a stoner, and he's like just hanging out on the stage by Mishima when he's talking to all the college students who took over the university. And I'm like, that guy looks like a great hang. He looks like a really chill dude. I think I'd like to hang with him.
I think I need to watch this movie a couple more times to even get an actual answer on this. But I will say for right now that the guy who was supposed to cut his head off and couldn't do it.
Oh, my gosh.
That would be me. So maybe me and him would get along. I'd be like, I can't do this. This is too morbid. Jeez.
I said for worst Mishima. But I wrote it as Mishima, question mark, question mark, question mark. But at times, best hang Mishima, question mark, question mark, question mark.
It's so true, though.
Because sometimes I listen to artists who I frankly think are uncool people in real life. And by uncool, I mean mean or full of themselves. But I still enjoy listening to them interviewed and things. So that's the time where I'd be interested to listen to them. But then other times I'd be like, I need to not listen to you. You are so annoying and full of it.
It is Tarantino, honestly.
What do you mean?
Oh, he's so fun to listen to interview-wise, but he's so full of his own shit.
Yes.
Brady.
I think that. Tom Brady? Yeah.
Not Tom Brady. Oh. Brady.
Brady Corbet.
Brady Corbet.
Oh, my gosh. One can only make Solaris.
Ah, yes. Of course.
Also, worst hang for me.
Oh, yeah.
Osamu, the main guy in Kyoko's house. What a loser, honestly, that guy.
The main character?
Yeah, he's the guy who's like always looking at himself in the mirror. That guy.
I think also another bad hang would be the guy in the first chapter. He seemed kind of annoying.
He was kind of a womanizer.
Kind of a womanizer, and yeah. I don't know.
I don't think he treated women very well, so yeah, for sure. I would also say the lady who just slices and dices the character. Bad hang. Don't want to hang out with that
lady.
Yeah,
I don't think I want that. No.
Uncool.
First time meeting her, and she's like, can I buy you?
Seriously.
No. What about, okay, fun facts. I have lots of fun facts.
Yes.
Some of which we have covered as we've gone through. But we talked a little bit about Coppola's Zoetrope Studios, but he bought the rights to novels from Mishima's widow. And again, as they made this movie, they did not have rights to everything. I don't think they had rights to Confessions of a Mask, which is a pretty gay-themed story and also is Mishima. People take it a lot as like an autobiography. And then also Forbidden Colors, which is another very gay one that his wife was like, no, I don't want you to have the rights to this one.
Yeah, that was the one that they were going to do instead of Kyoko's house. But yeah.
I think if I could have changed something about this movie, maybe you just add that in there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good add. Again, with the denial of the use of Forbidden Colors, Schrader agreed to Mishima's widow to only portray things in the film that like explicitly happened or that were explicitly taken from his work, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, that's probably interesting.
That's probably really annoying.
What do you mean?
Like, don't you feel like that'd be hard to do? Like,
oh,
if he had any artistic flourishes here with his, like, how his life was portrayed.
For sure. Well, I mean, the artistic flourishes, I would argue, are there. But, like, the...
Well, I guess that's the wrong word choice.
Yeah. It's more like editing the story.
Yeah.
Of, like, that would be hard, for sure. Yeah. According to an article that I read on the internet, so it's definitely true, by The Independent, Mishima wrote 34 novels, 25 collections of short stories, 50 plays, and 35 books of essays.
It's crazy.
Kind of insane.
Some Stephen King level numbers.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that's real.
Wait, did you just say The Independent?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a real publication. You know, like in Ted Lasso?
Ted Lasso.
Trent Crim, The Independent. I thought that was fake.
Yep. Nope, it is a real thing. Also, Mishima is not Mishima's real name. He says this in the movie.
Pen name, right?
Yep, it's his pen name, his real name. Gonna do my best. Kimitake Hiroki. I'm pretty sure I
that
did
sounds,
not.
Honestly,
yeah, I'm
good.
Sure it sounds right to us.
It sounds right to us. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if it is. Yeah, Tyler, any other fun facts?
The craziest fact I learned while researching this movie was that Schrader was thinking a lot about how to shoot the short stories, and he almost did it on VHS. And that was, like, his, like, way, which is...
Tyler, tell us about Aiko as well, within this, because
totally,
this is connected.
Absolutely. The VHS thing is bananas. I don't really know what he was getting off on there. But, yeah, so Iko is the production costume designer for this movie. My opinion at this point is that she made this movie.
I agree with you.
Would not have succeeded without her. She did all of the – I think she was like a famous artist in Japan, and Schrader happened to find her and was like, can you do this movie? She'd never made a movie before, which is absolutely insane. I think some of the sets in this movie are better than any sets in any movie I've ever seen, and she literally hadn't made a movie before. Also, that they're doing this across the language barrier is kind of insane.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was like, why don't we shoot these like plays?
Yeah.
And I think it's amazing.
And like crazy plays.
Yeah.
Like wildly, like the Golden Pavilion, like the background is gold.
Well,
but then also like where he's standing on the white stones and stuff, like the painted sky background is amazing. It's one of the coolest, like, quote unquote play, like backgrounds that I've ever seen.
Well, in the scene, like when the golden, I think it's like my favorite shot of the whole movie when it's in the first, the Temple of the Golden Pavilion, when the camera is zooming up on the guy's face and then the Golden Pavilion like opens. Mm-hmm. They literally had the whole crew with ropes pulling
to open
the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff's crazy.
Yeah. Iko Ashoka, like, this movie made me want to just look at her other work. Like, I don't even think she mainly
does. She's a production designer for two films, this one and one other.
Yeah, she does, like, mostly just, like, visual art and, like, costume design and stuff, I think. And I just, like, after watching this, it's like, wow, you're amazing.
Tyler wants to watch the other movie that she's been a production designer
on. Which is what?
It is Closet Land.
What is that?
It's some weird movie that she had a lot more than just that.
A young writer is interrogated by a sadistic secret policeman. She is accused of embedding political messages in her children's stories. The entire movie takes place in one room with only the two actors. The movie is set in an unidentified modern police state.
That sounds so awesome.
Doesn't it sound kind of crazy?
But she was also the production designer on that one Coppola movie.
Dracula.
Yeah, Dracula. Which,
yep. She was a costume designer, different.
Oh, yes. What did I say? Production?
You said production.
Costume. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait.
sorry. We're still talking about her. Yeah. I saw something. She's also an actor in this movie.
Mishima? Oh, no. In
Mishima. Iko
really?
Is.
Huh. What does she play?
Let's see here. Oh, no, sorry. That's my bad. It's Making Mishima. It has, like, the same poster.
Okay.
But it's Making Mishima, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the one
it's just a documentary. Like,
when I got the Criterion collection for this, which is incredible looking, I watched all the special features, and they had interviews with her. There's an interview there's a question where they're like, how was it working with Schrader on this movie? And she had said that their first interaction was like, Iko was like, I don't like this Mishima guy. I think he's a jackass. And Schrader was like, cool. That's exactly what I want. So
amazing.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that I found interesting was that there was such anticipated / I think real hostility from the right wing in Japan when Schrader was coming to make it for a while. He had to wear a knife-proof vest. And when I saw that, I was like, that's crazy. That would do something on your psyche. And then I also thought, because Japan has very tight gun control, I was like, wouldn't it be nice to just have to kind of worry about knives?
Yeah, knives instead of guns.
Seriously.
Right. The U.S. has no issues with any of that at all. Any other fun facts?
Yeah, I had two more things.
Okay.
So back to philosophy, actually. Schrader was a huge fan of Sartre, which if you read any Sartre, makes complete sense.
I have not.
I'll read a section from Being in Nothingness because it is like, it's like Schrader as a statement. So like there's a section in Being in Nothingness where he's talking about the existence of others, and the opening reflection is on shame. And so this is from Sartre. Shame is by nature recognition. I recognize that I am as the other sees me. Even if some power had been pleased to endow me with a body wholly constituted before it should be for others, still my vulgarity and my awkwardness could not lodge it there potentially, for they surpass the body. Shame is shame of oneself before the other. These two structures are inseparable. Yes. Shame being literally the only way I can interact with the other people. Not exactly what he's saying, but that's
Yeah.
pretty Schrader-y.
Yeah. That is very Schrader-y if you look at, like, Taxi Driver or Raging Bull or First Reformed or Card Counter American Gigolo.
This was my next one, which is, it's kind of a question for you guys. I was trying to, I have a Letterboxd list for the pathetic man, like, subgenre. and so I was, is this, like, peak pathetic man movie? All right, these are some of the other ones I wrote down. The Graduate, Hour of the Wolf, The Conversation, Night Moves, Marathon Man, Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, Affliction, Eyes Wide Shut, Uncut Gems. It's a mean list.
Reread like the second half of that list.
Raging Bull, Affliction, Eyes Wide Shut, Uncut Gems.
Okay.
I think Uncut Gems is like the ultimate pathetic man.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one.
Yeah, he's pretty sad.
I don't know. Anything else, Tyler?
Yeah, anything else?
Justin? Did you have something you were going to say?
Well, no. Let's just move on to the categories. I was getting ahead of myself.
Okay. So, next question. What should you pair this movie with? It can be literally anything within the human experience. What would you guys pair this with? Tyler?
Arson, sadomasochism,
yes.
Killing capitalists, misery. Yeah.
All those a lot things of good sound things.
Good. Not really. Actually, definitely from the movie, the thing I would pair it with is that dope little coffee cup he sips in the beginning of the movie. Do you remember that? It's like a tiny little espresso mug. And
Yeah.
I would definitely drink that while watching this movie.
Justin, what would you pair it with?
I said, well, this is like a pathetic woman movie. But the movie Tar.
Oh, that's interesting. Absolutely.
Another, like, excellent artist. She makes great work, but she's deeply problematic in different ways.
Also, Schrader and Facebook definitely relates to that movie in a certain way.
Yep. Mm. Yep. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Schrader really shows his own pathetic manness through his social media usage. I would say...
Oh, wait, one last thing. Schrader compared The Brutalist to Citizen Kane. Bad take. This is a bad take.
That's crazy.
I'm just shitting on this movie because Justin's here and it's fun.
All right, Tyler, let's fight about The Brutalist.
Sorry, what movie did you just shit on?
The Brutalist.
Oh, yeah. That's fine. I like that movie. I don't care, though.
I said Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters, and then watch the movie Harakiri. The movie Harakiri, directed by Masaki Kobayashi. He makes this movie about Harakiri, a form of samurai ritualistic suicide. And the movie would be an amazing pairing with this movie because Harakiri just shows the emptiness, I think, of this kind of thing, which I also think that the movie Mishima does as well. But Mishima himself, I think, did not see the emptiness in what it actually is. And I think that Harakiri does such a great job of telling a really awesome, compelling story that is sad and just really pulls you in, but then also showing and critiquing like this. I think it can be applied to fascism. I also think it can be applied to, for lack of a better term, like toxic masculinity, like this critique of this is what this hyper-militaristic and hyper-macho and hyper-violent thing actually does. And I think it shows the emptiness of that very well. And it's honestly, ultimately, a very life-affirming movie, I think.
That's an incredible pairing. Also, you definitely would have to end with Harakiri to not have a sad night.
Yes. End with Harakiri. Not that it's like the feel-good movie of the summer, but it's definitely a bit more... maybe a bit more uplifting than this one. It doesn't have a super happy ending, but I find some hope in it for sure.
I also thought I dropped my paper. Where is it? I also thought you could do some crazy, depressing Schrader mixing.
Oh,
you could watch like Mishima. Like you could watch his
Canada.
Stuff.
Okay. Well, that's right. Depressing for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, that would be.
Okay, we're going to have to talk a little bit about O Canada, but keep going, Tyler.
Let me just say another thing. O Canada, I don't know if he was going to do this instead of O Canada, but he almost made this movie, The Jesuit, with Oscar Isaac, which was a revenge exploitation film.
What?
Which ended up getting made, but it was supposed to not be great, and it was by someone else. But someone on Letterboxd called it a pro-torture card counter. Which,
gross.
No,
that
but
doesn't make me want to watch it.
No, but if you watched it with his 80s stuff, you could watch American Gigolo, Mishima, Last Temptation of Christ. That would be a highly depressing.
That'd be wild.
That'd be crazy.
Wait, hold on a second. Last Temptation of Christ.
Scorsese? He didn't direct that, but he wrote it.
Oh, okay. Yep. I see. Yeah.
Scorsese and Schrader did the like writer-director duo where Schrader wrote and Scorsese directed for Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, and Last Temptation.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I want to do some quote tennis.
Wait, no. Hold on. Okay. Before we do that, well, maybe this is out of order. Are we going to do one thing you'd change about this movie?
Sure, we can. Yeah, let's do it.
Chop it up.
Because I thought this was funny.
Yeah.
I was like, first off, I think I prefer, like, this movie feels like an international movie, does it not? Doesn't it feel like that?
Yeah.
Why would you not have an international, like someone from Japan or someone else direct this movie? I'm just so interesting that Paul Schrader directed this movie.
I think that is a really good and fair question.
Well, they did, not this exact movie, but I think there was a Mishima movie made in Japan eventually after this. But
yeah, I don't know.
I don't know nothing about it.
Yeah. All right. I generally am like, yes, that should be like, it makes far more sense. And I think people like someone who is Japanese could portray this far better. And yet I really love this movie and it's very Schrader-y like to the core.
Yeah. No, it's good. So now I'm just getting kind of silly here, but I'm like, I think, you know, instead of Paul Schrader, let's throw this to Finchy to the adventure and that would be a great movie.
Oh, this movie by Fincher would be incredible.
That would be really interesting. I don't know. I think this movie's a little too flowy and ambient for Finchy because Finchy goes hard. Finchy's like plot, point. This happens. These characters are fighting the whole time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I just rewatched Social Network.
And
That's a lot of his movies are about people that are interesting people. So that's why it came to mind.
Cool. Do we want to do some quote tennis?
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right.
So this might have changed.
Quote tennis. We're going back and forth and back and forth with quotes. Who wants to start?
I wanted to explode, light the sky for an instant, and disappear.
Be a good boy and rub my legs.
Oh, yeah. We're getting deep.
I desired to be not only the seer, but the seen.
Guys like us are just like beautiful girls. We get sick of always being stared at.
You have no success with girls, and you don't have the guts to go to a whore.
Tyler has the best quotes.
Words had separated me from my body. The sun released me.
Even the most beautiful body is soon destroyed by age.
I have the ass of a foreign sailor.
Dang.
Are you still willing to pay the ultimate price for something that may accomplish nothing?
Ooh. They don't even know that art is a shadow, that stage blood is not enough.
Your skin is so beautiful, I just had to cut it.
Wow. Words are a deceit, but action is never deceitful.
Creating a beautiful work of art and becoming beautiful oneself is identical.
Don't kiss me until after I'm dead.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't like that. I almost put that one
I'm out of quotes.
I have "In One Night We'll Assassinate the Leaders of Capitalism." We'll burn down the banks. Oh, yeah. At dawn, law will restore power to the emperor. No.
you had Tyler until restore power to the emperor.
That was so funny watching the movie with Tyler and being like, yeah, oh, no. gosh. Yeah, that's most of them.
I think it's fair to say that Tyler won quote tennis if there is a winner.
If there's a winner, yes. Tennis. Which tennis is a sport, so there's a winner. Tyler won.
What was the rub my legs quote?
It's when he's with his grandma and she says, be a good boy and rub my legs.
I was really trying to remember that.
Okay, a few things. One, I just want to, since we're talking about Schrader, can we talk about O Canada, which is one of the worst movies?
Yeah, why do you want to talk about O Canada?
I don't know, because we all watched it together and it is, maybe we don't want to talk about it. Just, are there any thoughts? Do you guys have any thoughts on that movie?
I, like,
it just kind of shows to me the whole, like, Tyler or Justin talked about athletes going out at like the height of their powers, like retiring. It's one of those things where it's like Schrader has had some movies in his later life that I've actually really liked, i.e. First Reformed and The Card Counter. But like when you watch this, you're like, wow, this, oh yeah, you should be done.
This made me reflect. I wrote down the movies that I'd seen throughout the decades by him, and it made me reflect on like his rise and fall. So like in the 70s, he starts incredibly with Blue Collar, Hardcore, and then the scripts for Taxi Driver and Rolling Thunder, which is an incredible start. And then in the 80s, he goes full bore with American Gigolo, Cat People, Mishima, and then Raging Bull script and Last Temptation. And then the 90s, he starts to peter out. He's got some good stuff. He's got like Light Sleeper and Affliction. Even Comfort of Strangers is pretty good. And then the 2000s, you son of a bitch.
I saw him doing this, and I was like, I know where this is going.
It's killing me.
Tyler really likes to hear crunching noises. And he has this weird thing where most people are kind of annoyed by chewing with their mouths open, but Tyler likes it, so I just wanted to.
Yeah. I
don't
like
have a like fetish for
let
Tyler.
Him hear some nice.
He falls asleep to this sound.
Okay, I brought these chips for a bit, but they're actually really good.
Yeah, we'll stop eating them because it's really annoying.
Yeah. No, and then, okay, 2010s, he makes, like, two of the shittiest movies I've ever seen in my life, right in a row. They also happen to have Nick Cage. It's Dying of the Light and Dog Eat Dog. Terrible.
There's a reason I haven't heard
so
of
bad.
These movies.
They're so bad. So he, like, started to die in the 2010s, his brain was rotting. But then he made First Reformed.
Amazing.
Incredible.
Movie.
And then Card Counter and Master Gardener and they kind
Tyler,
of fell
I think that when Justin and I have Madison on, your wife, we're gonna ask her to extrapolate a little bit on how after she watched First Reform, she cried because she said, "This is my husband." I'm gonna need to just like hear her thoughts a little more deeply on that one.
Yeah.
This is all I got. Unless you want to talk about the Pacers, Justin. Do you want to talk about
the
Pacers?
God.
I really. I'm a shell of a human right now. If anyone thinks this episode is off by me today, it's because I'm tired and the Pacers tore my heart out last
night. We came in here, we were having like an hour's worth of technical difficulties, and the Pacers in a game where they played probably the best that they've played in the series so far for about two quarters, maybe? Maybe not? I don't know.
I think they played the best game in game three.
Okay.
And then this game was... a reversal of game three where I think in fourth quarter of this game they shot the bed at the end, but at the beginning of game three they sucked. Literally that flag, I was like livid for half an hour about that flagrant foul that they called. I was like, that's not a fucking flagrant.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, refs.
Whereas like who went up for that one shot and there was like someone like elbowed him in the head, someone like body checked him,
Toppin,
and they were like, I don't know if this is a flagrant.
Yeah.
Obi Toppin was getting like, he was taking a lot of damage yesterday. I was like, this is crazy.
That's the other annoying thing about NBA games sometimes with these refs is they take forever. I'm like, we figured this out 2 minutes ago, and you're looking at this for like 10 minutes. Like, what are you doing?
That also, one old like gray haired dude was like definitely.
So I'm gonna fill you guys in. Do you know people call this guy the extender?
No.
Who
do they call that?
Foster, that ref that Tyler just brought up, because he comes in and he calls these shitty games and he extends series because it favors one team. I actually don't think that's why the Pacers lost, even though as much as I disagree with a lot of the calls, I think they sucked at the last 3 minutes of the game. They were up 4 points.
Rough to
and
watch.
They lost by seven somehow. But I will say the refs just annoy the hell out of me, and like many other people, I'm not the first person in the world. There was one point where that guy made a call, like a foul on the floor, like not a shooting foul, and he like made the call and then was like, all right, we're back. I dropped my mic on there because I was trying to.
He's flailing about.
I was flailing my arms. Okay, yeah, he does that twice, like exaggerated, and then he's like.
Yeah.
On the floor. Refs, we're not fucking here to watch you. Like, shut the hell up. Oh my gosh.
Justin's it was pretty bad.
Spicy.
Dude, I'm so mad about that
spicy
game.
Spicy.
Mad that they lost and then just mad about the refs. So it's a bad combination. We can cut all of this. I really don't care. By the time this comes out, they're either going to have won the championship or they're not. So. I just. These types of games drive me insane. Oh, truly.
It's sad.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, we can do whatever we want with that.
Okay. Anything else from either of you guys?
That's it. So, if we don't have anything else, thanks for listening today to Show Me the Movies in our discussion on Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters. You can email us at themoviesshowme@gmail.com if you have any questions or comments for us. And remember to follow us on Blue Sky and Instagram. We'll see you next time.
And always remember to be a good boy and rub my legs.